well. Can anyone hear me? This is 2X. Hello? Hello? This is 2X2L. Anyone? 2X2L. I'm not sure I know exactly how to operate this equipment. Is anyone out there? Am I getting through? I think I've got everything switched on. I'm not even sure what call letters I should be using. I saw these written down beside the equipment. 2X2L. This is 2X2L calling for anyone.
Well, I hope somebody's hearing this. If you are, you can probably hear the wind outside. All day, all night, violent gusts shaking this place like a train going by. This place I'm in isn't much. Boards nailed over timbers, tar paper coverings. I'm lucky if it doesn't blow over. Lucky too that this shack sits up on stilts, because right now the whole of Great Marsh underneath me is flooded, 6 feet deep with whitecaps. Behind me is a stretch of dunes running 10 miles long, separating the marsh from Cape Cod Bay. Since they closed the dunes to the off-road vehicles, this place has become much more remote, inaccessible. That's why I'm here. I'm hiding out. I arrived 5 nights ago from New York. 5 nights and 5,000 light years from where I was before all this started. I broke into this shack. I found all this ham radio equipment. I didn't even think to use it at first. And then when I did, it took me a whole day to screw up the courage. I'm normally not used to talking over a microphone. Anyway, tonight I've come on the air to be a radio station of one. An emergency broadcasting system is more like it. I'd like to tell you none of this really happened. I've tried telling myself the same thing. After all, none of it, well, except the puncture wounds that I actually see with my own eyes. Only my ears. But what I heard was real enough. Too real. Because it was happening. It, just like this night is happening. It's not some dream you're dreaming, some nightmare. You only wish it was. Except just like a dream, you can't control it. You're trapped in it. You want to escape, but there's no escaping. And you have to listen all over again. I was living in New York City. The would-be writer living there because he felt it was crucial to live close to those in the publishing world. Unfortunately, nobody in the publishing world was feeling the same way. Nobody except my agent. A sentimental, white-haired old lady, so old her first client was Sinclair Lewis. She believed in my work, sent me warm letters of encouragement. Condolences, actually, since no checks ever arrived along with them. The actual checks came from another old lady, a spinster aunt of mine who was fast becoming senile. So senile, in fact, she sometimes forgot sending them, and I would have to scrape by. My pressure to succeed now in a race with her rapidly slipping mental faculties. Still, my writing didn't sell, and my solution was to do the only thing I could do, which was to work harder and turn out more. I began living the life of a recluse, working myself towards nervous exhaustion and compensating in the way so many of our great sodden and besotted writers have compensated, by drinking and drinking harder. If I couldn't be a great writer, I could at least act like one. Until one night I came staggering home much later and much drunker than normal. Except I didn't make it home. I passed out on the sidewalk. Next thing I know, I feel a hand shaking me, two arms lifting me up, steadying me, brushing me off, steering me home, holding me up by the nape of the collar. Whoever my protector was, and I was too stone drunk to even tell, he managed to guide me back to my apartment, plop me in my bed, and I never found out who it was. That is until a week later. I was coming out of my building, and I passed a face that was vaguely familiar. It was a face maybe I had seen around the streets before. This time there was a wry smile, a a certain knowingness to his expression, but also the willingness to let me pass by if it was my choice not to acknowledge something. So I had to ask. His name was George Nelly. More people called him Nelly than George. His ambition was to be an actor, but right now he was settling for working in a factory where his job was stamping out plastic Easter bunnies. It was Nelly's intrinsic nature to help people. A fairly disastrous trait if you live in a place like New York. But he couldn't help himself. Once when my dotty aunt forgot sending me my check, and I couldn't bear the humiliation of reminding her, he gave me some of his rabbit money. His good deeds were apt to rub off on you. Which is why during another month when my aunt, just as absent-mindedly, sent me two checks instead of one, instead of sending one back as I should have done, I turned it over to him. He had that effect on you, making you somehow less ethical but more humanitarian than you actually were. It was that humanitarian streak that got him into trouble, as I found out the night he came knocking on my door. Did I say knocking?
Coming. I'm coming.
Hey, come on. Hurry up.
I'm going as fast as I can. Hold on. Oh, my God. What is it? What time
Close
is it?
Close it. Lock it.
What is it?
No, keep the lights off. Do me a favor. Check out the window. Make sure you don't see a white van. On second thought, never mind. Just get me a shot of brandy, will you? And something for these hands.
My God, what happened?
Jumping over a wall. They're not as bad as they look. I'll clean them up. Just give me the brandy.
Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should see a doctor. Those look like puncture wounds.
Get it.
You could get tetanus.
I said forget it. Will you forget it? Just get me the drink, will you? You don't understand. I saw two people murdered tonight. Murdered right in front of my eyes. Not any further away than I am to you, and there wasn't a thing I could do about it.
What happened?
The drink, Davy. Come on.
All right, all right.
I'm going to wash up.
What happened? Where were you?
I hit a few bars, shot some pool. Need your drink. Just set it down. I've almost got these wrapped.
With what?
Toilet paper.
What? Great. Oh, terrific. Why don't you just ask for an infection? You're going to get lockjaw if you're not careful.
Where's the drink?
Here.
Thanks. Lockjaw. It's funny you should mention it.
Nellie, what the hell happened?
I'll tell you. It was late. I was walking along Canal Street. I had been drinking, but not heavily, but just enough to feel like it was the end of another long work week. I was coming up on Chinatown. The Chinese were having some celebration with fireworks. Feeling like avoiding all the noise, I made a detour up into Hell's Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen. It's the only place in New York that manages to stay steamy even at the end of October. Steam covering windows of restaurants, the steam coming out of vents, coming up through manhole covers. I was just wandering about. I took a detour off my detour, and pretty soon I realized I was entering the land of the derelict. More and more of them sleeping in doorways. Sleeping on top of sidewalk gratings that funnel warm exhales from the big buildings. Sometimes two or three stretched out on a single grate, like hot dogs on the grill. I probably should have been more alert to the danger, but somehow I didn't feel at risk. Maybe it was the euphoria of the drinks. Maybe the fact that big as I am, I rarely get accosted. Anyway, I'm walking down this deserted side street, lined with businesses all shuttered and padlocked. And for what reason, I don't know. All of a sudden, my sense of well-being disappears, replaced by the opposite sort of feeling. An almost tingling sensation that something is about to happen. It could have been the quiet. You get used to the sounds of traffic all the time. And then when it's not there, when it's more muted, then the quiet itself begins to build up until it becomes a thing, not just the absence of something else. I was standing there listening, feeling, when suddenly the next sound I hear is a car coming quietly down the street. No, not a car, but a van, a white van. Instinctively, I reacted by ducking out of sight. I slipped into the shadows of a building overhang just as the headlights were coming on. The van stops almost in front of me. One of two guys in the front seat jumps out. He's wearing a coverall-type uniform, and he's bearing down on a drunk lying just down the way. The drunk, in his alcoholic stupor, has no idea what's happening. He's marched to the van. The guy opens the back and shoves him inside, not any too gently. All this time I'm watching, I'm thinking, I don't like what I'm seeing. Never mind, it's for his own good. Obviously, he doesn't want to go. They were pulling away. I might have yelled to stop them, but instead I thought I could run and catch them by surprise when they slowed at the next intersection. Except I couldn't. Not quite. Just as I would catch up, the van would pull away again, but never so far that I lost sight completely. They didn't seem to be aware of me following. This went on for 6 blocks or more, and then the van turned a corner. By the time I got there, they were just disappearing down another side street. A dead end, as it turned out. But where was the van? My ears picked out the tail end sound of an automatic door sliding shut. The van had disappeared into an underground delivery entrance to an old brick warehouse that looked completely shut up. There was no sign above the door, no signs of activity anywhere inside. There were no windows at all until the third floor, and continuing up to the eighth floor, but every floor was dark. I might have banged on the door and got an answer, but by now I was beginning to have suspicions. This wasn't like any shelter I had ever seen. I decided a more stealthful approach was called for. I got around to the back of the building by carefully climbing a chain-link fence adorned on top with strands of barbed wire. There was a small parking area in back. A garbage truck was parked about 4 feet out from the wall. By piling up wooden crates on top, I could just barely reach the bottom ledge of a third-story window. The window was closed, but at a slight angle which suggested it might not be locked. It wasn't, as I found out, using a long stick to push it open. With a carefully balanced leap, I made it across, just barely holding on to the bottom of the sill. I hoisted myself in, closed the window behind me. The wooden crates would have to stay where they were, a dead giveaway if a guard or a cop happened by, but what could I do? I wasn't thinking about the consequences if I was caught breaking and entering. Somehow, knowing I wasn't breaking in to steal anything made it seem all right. Tell that to the judge, though. The floor was divided into cubicles of smaller offices, with partitions running not quite to the ceiling. A center corridor ran down to a red exit sign illuminated above the staircase. I followed the stairs down until I hit a dead end, a locked door with no way to get through to the levels below. I spent some time looking around for another set of stairs, but no luck. I went back up to the third floor. I was thinking I had better just get out when suddenly I realized I was hearing voices from off somewhere. I had to hunt around to figure out where the sound was coming from. Finally, in a larger office at the back, I discovered an air shaft that connected with the building's heating system. The voices were traveling up the shaft from below. I removed the grate. Quietly. It was only set in place. I felt around inside. It was completely dark, but large enough for a person to crawl through. Reaching down, I felt the top rung of a built-in ladder. There was no heat coming out of it, although I could easily smell the stale vapors of fuel oil. Entering feet first, keeping my elbows tucked into my chest like a kangaroo, I was just able to make my way down. A thin layer of oily dust was everywhere. Luckily it was oily. I'm sure I would have kicked up enough to make me cough, something I knew I couldn't afford to do. At the bottom of a long climb going down, I found another air shaft running laterally, the voices getting ever so slightly louder. They didn't begin sounding distinct until I rounded a 90-degree corner. And there, ahead of me, was a checkerboard shaft of light filtering up from the room below. I crawled ahead so slowly you would have had to look carefully to even notice I was moving. to make the slightest sound. When I get there, I'm looking down into a dark room with only one bright light. Beneath me is a stainless steel operating table. Smaller, though, like what you see in a veterinarian's office. The drunk, who's lying there, has his legs dangling over the end. He's asleep, one arm flung over his eyes to shield them from the brightness of the overhead lamp. What happens next? The door opens. A man enters wearing a doctor's white coat. He moves the drunk's arm, lifts one eyelid. The drunk reacts feebly, trying to swat him away. The doctor, ignoring him, reaches for a tray of instruments and picks up a hypodermic. He holds the needle up to the light, and I think for a moment he'll see me. I draw back. When I dare to look again, I can only assume the injection has been given. There's no reaction, though. The drunk is still snoring. Seconds pass. 5, 6, 7. Suddenly he's awake. Bold awake. His body, his mind, registering the presence of some foreign substance coursing through his bloodstream. Something there alongside the alcohol. He opens his mouth to scream, but no scream comes out. His vocal cords are frozen. His body is arching, lifting off the table. They're holding him down. Then gradually, the spasm subsiding, his body is coming back down, his eyes staring upwards, open, vacant, dead. I wanted to run, to claw my way out of there, but something kept me frozen to the spot. Maybe I was just afraid that in moving I would be discovered. Then the door opens again. Another victim. No drunk this time, but a woman prostitute. Heavy makeup, tight skirt, blonde wig coming askew. They remove it. She can't move, can't talk, but her eyes look up and see me almost right away. Desperate eyes calling for help, pleading for help. Me, like a coward, shaking my head to her. No, no, don't look up. Don't call their attention. And the whole thing happening again. The needle, her struggles, wild struggles, the injection, the slowly rising spasm, her body arching, eyes losing sight, losing focus, becoming dead. I couldn't stand it anymore. I had to get out or start screaming. During a moment of commotion, I backed my way, retraced my route, climbing the long ladder. I was just about to crawl out when my mind registered that something was different. A light burning down at the end of the corridor that hadn't been on before. I didn't wait. I ran for the window and dove through it head first. I heard a shot. I landed hard, but amazingly unhurt. The wooden crates breaking up under me actually cushioned my fall. I rolled down off the truck and took off running. I saw the chain-link fence ahead of me, and I sprang for it fully 5 yards before I got there. I was up and over it in a single bound, unhurt except for these puncture wounds. I was running for the corner of the building. I could almost feel the muzzle of the gun barrel aiming for my back. I made a sudden swerve to the left, and that may have saved my life because a split second later I heard the shot. I was around the corner and gone. I had a pretty good hunch what would happen next, so I found a hiding spot and ducked into it. Less than 2 minutes later, then they were gone. Cleared out. What to do next? Go to the police, I thought? But then I realized I couldn't. So I came here.
God. But we've got to go to the police. We've got to tell them.
Tell them what? Explain I broke into a building? Tell them what I saw? Is anybody going to believe me? Show them evidence? What evidence? You can bet that once their cover was blown, they cleared out fast, taking everything with them. Sure, I witnessed 2 murders, but who were they? Some nameless bum? An equally nameless prostitute? Who's going to miss them? Who's going to even know they're gone?
But why are they doing it?
Yeah, well, here's what I think. It's a medical thing. It's got to be. A black market for spare parts. They pick people off the street. People who have fallen through the cracks. Murder them by lethal injection, then sell their organs. Hearts, liver, kidneys, corneas, bone marrow, who knows what.
But who would do such a thing?
Come on, Davy, it's money. It's people who realize they can get rich selling a commodity you can't get anyplace else. That if you're dying and you've got to have it, you'll pay anything for it. No questions asked. They've got to be stopped, Davy. We've got to figure some way to stop them. And it's up to us to do it.
It was up to us to catch the killers. But how? How do you find murderers in a place as big as New York? In size, not only Manhattan, but Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island. In population, so many people. It was like searching for a needle in a haystack full of needles. We knew they had moved their location, but sooner or later, we assumed, when they felt it was safe, they would come back to this area. It was too easy pickings. Nellie said if we could locate their van again, that would lead us to their new setup, just as before. Then we could call the police. But how do you find their van? And once finding it, how to follow? A car? We didn't have a car. Foot? It was only by luck that Nellie hadn't lost them the first time. I wish there was some way we could attach a homing signal. Like in spy movies where they put some magnetic device on the bumper and then watch a screen as a red blinking light slowly crawls its way across the grid of city streets, showing them where the vehicle is at every moment. The trouble is, we weren't that sophisticated. Besides, I didn't think a homing signal bouncing around the canyons of Manhattan would be all that successful anyway. It was Nellie who finally came up with the idea, a variation of my plan of a homing device. It was simple, ingenious, and it was bound to work. And it was unbelievably, incredibly dangerous. God, I still can't believe we went through with it. It was based on one simple fact. Not only did we know how they operated, we also knew what kind of people they were looking for.
Are you ever coming out? What's taking so long?
Get ready, I'm coming out.
There. How do I read?
Whew. What is that stuff?
You like it? It's a little designer fragrance I came up with myself. One part wine, three parts whiskey, splash of rum.
I must say you look the part. Your stubbly beard, the grime, the way your hair is plastered over like you've been sleeping on a doormat all week. I see you even gave yourself a haircut.
Yeah, eyes closed. Best results that way.
To go along with his face and aroma, he was wearing a pair of bum's trousers, a torn flannel shirt made vile and disgusting by stains down the front, also an oversized winter overcoat typical of what bums wear. Excepting this one had a brand new cellular telephone sewn into the bottom lining.
I feel like a kid getting ready to go out trick-or-treating.
Oh, no. I'll tell you what you think. You think you're some vigilante public citizen who thinks he has to go out and protect us all, doing a job much better left to the police. Nellie, you shouldn't be doing this alone.
I'm not. You're helping, remember?
But I'll be here.
I'll be careful.
Take a gun.
When was the last time you saw a bum with a gun?
When was the last time you saw a bum with a cellular telephone? The phone was central to our plan. We had pooled our money and bought one. Nellie had carefully removed the microphone out of the phone's receiver and sewn it under a patch of material on the coat's lapel,
where it couldn't be seen, but would pick up whatever he said. The rest of the unit was wrapped and tucked into the bottom lining of his coat. Without feeling around, you wouldn't know it was there.
Look, I'm not taking a gun because I won't need it. The minute things fall apart, I'm out of there. And don't try to talk me out of this. Think of it this way. You know I always wanted to be an actor. Well, here's my chance to go out and give the performance of a lifetime. Who knows? Maybe a month of performances. This is only opening night. I may not get lucky. So let me go. I'll be careful. You'll see. This'll work. Just stick by the phone, okay?
Stick by the phone, he said. Easier said than done. He went out and I sat there waiting, wrestling with my feelings of dread, waiting for his phone call that would open up the line between me and his overcoat. Nellie was posing as a street bum decoy. The open phone line would enable me to monitor what was happening, enable him to report his position wherever they took him. As soon as he knew, I would know. And as soon as I knew, I would call in the police. But what if the microphone malfunctioned? What if we got cut off? What if he couldn't figure out where they were taking him? What if I couldn't get through to the police? We weren't relying on the emergency 911 number. Nellie had somehow gotten hold of a special unlisted number that connected directly with the homicide division of police headquarters. The minute I knew where they were taking him, I would run to the payphone downstairs, dial the number, and report a murder in progress. That would bring the quickest response. But what if it wasn't quick enough? What if in the meantime the killers became suspicious? He'd be dead. They'd kill him instantly. Nellie, listen. I've been thinking about this. I really don't
without steroids
think it's a good
or harmful diets.
What?
We'll show you how. Just answer yes.
Great. Terrific. Nothing can go wrong, huh? That's it. This is too dangerous. We're not going to go. Nellie, is that you?
Who were you expecting?
I was expecting you, but I just got some recorded sales pitch for a weight control program.
Really? Did you sign up? I was thinking you could use a little...
Shut up, damn it! Listen to me! Come on back. We're not going to go through with this. There's got to be a better way.
There isn't. We've been over it.
Nellie, what if you've been trying to get through just then?
Well, I wasn't. Anyway, I'm through now and I'm staying on the line, remember?
Nellie, what if we get cut off? How will you know? You won't even know!
Goodbye, Davey.
Wait,
I'm
Nellie!
I'm listening to this.
Nellie, no, don't hang up!
You away.
No, I got a bad feeling about this. Call it off! Damn it, Nellie, you're gonna get yourself killed!
I hope you're not still talking, because I can't hear a word you're saying.
Idiot! I gotta call the police now and have
them
pick
partner.
You up.
I know you're hearing me. Just relax. Just a case of nerves. I had them too, but now I'm out here moving around and I feel much better. Besides, why worry? This is only the first night. Can't expect to land the big fish the first time you go angling. Okay, I'm crossing Canal Street now. Heading east.
Just be careful, will you?
I'll keep you company as long as it's safe. If I suddenly get quiet or lapse into drunken ease, you'll understand. Got a place in mind I'm heading for. Should be good. If not, I'll try someplace else. It's not ordinary homeless these guys are looking for, but derelicts. Truly adrift, whose disappearance won't arouse suspicion. Therefore, I shall be just that. Oh, here comes someone.
Say, buddy, say, with spare change? 50 cents? A quarter? Come on, anything?
Nothing? It didn't work. I probably should have told him I accept all major credit cards. Okay, still heading east. You know, actually talking to you this way is not a bad ploy. To anybody else, it's going to look like a drunk mumbling to himself like so many do. Ooh, wait, what's this? Perfect thing, an empty wine bottle. Let's see, good prop. Screw top. The hearty burgundy. The bouquet. Ugh. Oh, wait, here comes some other folks.
Hey, how's about some cigarettes? You got any cigarettes? What's the matter? I'm not good enough to share the sidewalk with? Go on. Who needs ya?
The young couple decided to take a detour. Can't figure out why. Perhaps I should have inquired where they were going. The opera, maybe. Offered to accompany them. Okay. I'm taking a turn now. This is getting into the right area. Fairly deserted. Not many cars parked. Ought to be pretty visible. Guess I'll hang out here a while. Here's a subway grating. Perfect place to crumple up for a few hours. Lie down. Hug my empty wine bottle like a newborn baby and look like I'm sleeping it off. God, this is uncomfortable. How does anybody ever get used to this? All comfort is relative, I suppose. At least I'm dry. At least it's not too cold. Boy, I sure could use some coffee, though. Oh, no, here comes a guy walking his Doberman. Whew, that was close. I was about to be mistaken for a fire hydrant. Ruin my designer fragrance. Here comes a subway train below me. Damn, it's cold lying here. God, I wish I had some coffee. I'll tell you one thing we should have done. We should have sewn an electric blanket into this lining. You know, if you really wanted to do away with the homeless problem, all you gotta do is pass a law where everybody's gotta sleep out like this for one whole night. See what it's like. And there goes the train. Boy, it's cold.
We talked for hours. Rather, he talked, I listened. It got late. Now was the right time. He was alone, the location perfect. Both of us knew it might happen at any moment. The difference was he wanted it to happen. I was praying it wouldn't. Nevertheless, around midnight, after a long silence when I thought he might be napping, his voice suddenly broke in.
Davey. Davey, wake up. Are you listening? This could be it. There's a van cruising down the street. Hold on.
Oh, my God. No. Run, Nellie. Get up and run.
All right,
buddy, get up. You're
sleep it out someplace
else. Let's go.
Hey, what's
get
this?
Up. Come on.
What are you doing? Leave me alone.
Get up.
Come on, get up. I'm sleeping here.
No, you're not. Come on with us.
Hey, what are you, hey, wait, you're breaking my arm. Come on, you bastards, let me go. You can't do this. This is a free way. It's a white man. It's a New York.
No, he don't get in.
What are you doing? Hey, you can't do this to me. Let me out of here, you bastards. You can't take me. I don't know my race. This is a free country, you bastards. You can't save me. You can't. You can't. Yeah.
Davey, can you hear me? We're on our way. I can see out the back. We're heading uptown. Across the Brome. Not sure where we're headed. Crossing Delancey.
Hey, let me out of here, you bastards! I don't worry.
We're going over Rivington now. Oh, we're slowing down. Okay. Well, we're moving again. Picking up speed. going? Turning right. We're not heading for the bridge, I hope. If we get over there, we're going to be out of range. No, no. Wait, he's slowing down again. I'm speeding up.
Hey, you guys, where are you taking me? I don't want to go. Take me back or leave me.
Okay, we're stopping now. This could be it. This is it. This is it. Remington and Suffolk. Hold on. They're coming around. They're getting me out.
Wait, no. Let me out. Where are you taking me? I don't want to go. Oh, where am I? What is this place? This brick building? This red door? Number two? Huh? Number two Remington? I don't know. Where. I've never been here. Let's go.
Stand sharp.
Nellie, don't go in. I've got the address. Now run!
Say, what do you say, fellas? I could use a drink.
Nellie, don't go inside! Damn it! I ran to the payphone. Come on. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Pick up the phone. Will you answer it?
Police, homicide.
I want to report an emergency. A murder. A man is about to be murdered.
Your name, please.
Listen to me, listen. It's at number 2 Rivington Street. Lower East Side, brick building, red door. Number 2, got it?
Your name.
My name? My name is David Martin Smith.
Address?
It's Cortland Street, number 12, apartment 7. Now, please, hurry. They're going to kill him if you don't get over there.
I'll send someone right over.
I hung up. I ran back upstairs to listen.
Hey, that light is... that's too bright. Turn it off. Where's my drink?
Yes,
you
yes,
said...
yes.
You promised
yes,
me...
yes, yes, just a minute. As soon as I finish, open your eyes for me.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute. Attendant! Hold this man. Hold him.
Buddy, what are you doing?
His legs. Get his legs. Go make it tighter. He must move. Very good. You see, this man is obviously not drunk. In fact, he shows no signs of chronic drinking at all. He's simply faking it, aren't you? You can stop pretending now.
Who are you?
See, I told you he was faking. Idiots, you've allowed this man to trick you.
Who are you?
Who am I, and who might you be?
Somebody who knows what you're up to.
Ah, I see. An investigative reporter. Working for somebody or freelancing? No answer? Well, this is very clever of you, infiltrating, finding out what we're up to.
I already know what you're up to. You're murdering people. I want to know why.
Ah, why do you think? Go ahead, you can guess. Don't be nervous. I can understand why you might be, but go ahead. Let's hear what you think.
I think it's a medical thing. You're killing people and then selling their bodies for parts.
Not a bad assumption. An involuntary organ donor program, is that it? There's just one problem. The people we pick up are in such bad shape, not many organs worth salvaging. Bad hearts, bad livers, bad kidneys.
Then why kill them?
Can't you think of another reason? No, probably not, and why should you? I'll give you a hint. It's not really murder at all.
Why isn't it?
Well, the usual definition of murder is an act committed against members of one's own species. That's right. Keep thinking. You're on the right track.
So you're not human? What are you, French?
I admire your sense of humor under these conditions, but I see you're beginning to understand. You know, it strikes me as the supreme arrogance of any species to imagine it doesn't have predators. Everything has predators, even I have predators. You humans like to think of yourselves at the top of the food chain, but there are so many different chains and no real tops to any of them.
Oh, God.
My goodness, you're shaking like a leaf, but don't look so shocked. I'm your predator, you are my meat, that's all. As a matter of fact, there are many of us living among you at the present time. As any population grows, so grow its predators. The only thing unusual about what's going on here is that you and I are able to communicate. How do you do? Pleased to eat you.
Oh, the police.
Now, don't worry about this injection. It's not nearly as painful
as you
might
think. Oh, they're coming.
Oh, oh.
finally.
And what is the meaning of this?
What?
Oh, it's you, Doctor.
Yes?
We had a call.
Obviously a mistake. There's nothing going on here that concerns you.
Hey,
go back to your duties. We've had enough
interruptions
for the
night. Come back here.
Get out now.
Wait a minute. Come back.
Ignore this, man.
Wait.
You're doing, I suppose.
Come back. Come back. Come back here.
Save your breath. They won't be returning. Oh, go ahead and shake. I won't think you're not a brave man. In fact, people like you are the reason we keep this so well hidden. If the general population knew, it might not remain so docile. Secrecy is best, and camouflage. Of course, for efficiency's sake, it was necessary to take over certain levels of government, particularly the police. Now, if you'll just hold still, this won't take long.
After that, I was running. Running to save him. Running to avenge him. Finally, just running, realizing it was too late. I couldn't save him. All I could do was get away. The police had my name and address. They would come looking. I couldn't go back. Not ever. So I came here. To this hunting shack on stilts in a marsh on Cape Cod. This is where I ended up. And this is where it ends. The wind has dropped now. It's almost an eerie silence after all that howling wind. The storm has pushed out to sea, or maybe it's only the eye of a hurricane. In a few moments, it will start up again, in the other direction. I don't think I'll wait around for it. I finished what I had to do. Warn you, for your sake, for his. Now there's only one thing left to finish. My God, how can anyone find peace living in a world that conceals such horrors? I'm signing off now. Good luck to you all. Good luck to everybody. And goodbye.
You have been listening to Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater's presentation of Some People Are Missing on Canal Street. Tonight's show was produced, written, and directed by Stephen Thomas Oney. Engineering by John Todd. Original music by Mark Birmingham. The actors in tonight's play, Stephen Russell played George Nelly. Art Divine was David Martin Smith. Alien Doctor played by Michael Mellor. Additional voices, Henry Morlock, John Cullity, and Debbie Oney. The detective was played by David Ellsworth. Janice Gray was Attorney Pearl. Recorded at HT Recording Studio, Cape Cod, and Rosemead Productions, Los Angeles. Copyrighted by Stephen Thomas Oney for Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater. This is Lou Dumont wishing you a pleasant evening and inviting you to tune in again when the fog rolls in on another chapter of Cape Cod. But wait, our story isn't over.
Now, Mr. Nelly, tell me again, and for the benefit of Attorney Pearl here, exactly what were you trying to do? And Miss Pearl, feel free to ask questions.
Thank you. I will.
Go ahead, Mr. Nelly.
Well, like I said, I was trying to pull an Orson Welles.
What's an Orson Welles?
You know, alien invasion, War of the Worlds thing.
For what purpose?
Well, to see if it could be done. My friends told me it wasn't possible, that in this day and age no one would believe. But I said, no, it was possible. Well, maybe not everyone, but a few. They said I couldn't get even one. So we made a bet. I always wanted to be an actor. This was a chance to prove my skill.
So what did you do?
First thing, I had to find a subject. I picked Davy because he's kind of nerdish. A typewriter type, a real loner. Those intellectual types have good imaginations, but that almost makes them more gullible, you know what I mean? once you get them leaning in the right direction.
I see. Go on.
It wasn't so easy, you know. I mean, these days, how do you truly make somebody believe there's an invasion going on? You can't just come right out and say, the Martians are coming. No, I had to be more subtle, more indirect. I had to first convince him it was something else, something also of a horrible nature. But then just at the last minute, just when he was most tense, just when all his senses were telling him it was true, then spring the bit about aliens. It worked, too. Pretty solid piece of acting, I have to say.
The puncture wounds?
Ah, they were faked. All he saw was blood. After that, bandages.
And the special phone number?
Hey, I had to have one, didn't I? I couldn't very well let him phone up the real cops. They were all friends of mine. Extras I enlisted to help me pull it off. It was supposed to be a prank, you know? Afterwards, we all went right back to his apartment to fill him in, but by then, I guess he had already taken off. Then nobody could locate him. I watched his apartment for days. I even checked his mail. Some letter from his agent about the book that sold, but... So I just waited. Then I heard they found his body.
Hmm. Where was the body found?
Washed up on a Cape Cod beach. Apparent suicide.
I guess I sort of messed up, didn't I?
Messed up? Oh, I wouldn't say so. You deliberately set out to frighten someone to death, and you succeeded. Very stylish. Premeditated murder is what it was.
Well, no. Wait a minute.
Attorney
Pearl, it was...
do you agree? Do we throw the book at Mr. Nelly?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think so. Murder, manslaughter at the least.
Come on.
I'd like to do a little researching first before we decide just how big a book we can throw at Mr. Nelly. But don't worry, Mr. Nelly. We're going to throw one. Afterwards, I'm sure you can look forward to a judge and jury appreciating what a really great performance you gave and rewarding you with a nice big part down at the prison playhouse.
Hey, wait a minute.
Won't that be fun, Mr. Nelly? You pretended you were a bum, and you were one. Now you can pretend to be a convict.
This has been a Highbridge audio presentation.